So the first thing I do when I see parents is just say, take a feed-in holiday. So if you've got a picky eater and you've noticed they are eliminating more and more foods, but they're still covering all the food groups, one thing you can do is just take a step back. Because what you're probably doing in those moments is trying to feed more and more. Just take a step back.
This is a Baby Brunch podcast. I am so excited. Guess who's joining us in our Baby Brunch studio? Kath McGaw is with us. I can't believe you're sitting right here.
No, it's so cool to be here.
Many books later.
Yeah.
When I see you, yes. I see my small baby. I've just made butternut for her. It's a beautiful orange color. And then she was, Esther at the time was about 7.5 months old. And she took that little bowl and she picked it up and she threw it against the white wall. And I burst out in tears.
Oh, shit.
And that mark, that orange stain against that wall. Stayed there until the day we sold that house.
That's so funny.
And it was a memory of my child eating and reading all your books. Fussy eaters, how to eat, how to feed your baby, hand led, finger led. Oh, my life. Kath, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's so lovely to be here.
Why do you help people to feed their children? Why did pediatric why did you become a pediatric dietitian? Why do you want to help us feed our little babies?
I just think, you know, after having my second child and just having had such a special journey with my first and breastfeeding, and then suddenly going into solids and just not knowing what to do and feeling so helpless, and then he was such a bad eater, so picky. And then when my second one came around, I was just getting the journey going with her, and sadly she did pass away.
Sorry.
And then but in that moment I was like, how can I make her life count? And one of the ways was to just help other parents to go on journeys with their children. So that was kind of what sparked my journey. And then I was blessed with two more children after that, and they just encouraged me on my journey and just to navigate different things with them. You know, both had different challenges as they were growing up, different things. And my youngest is on the spectrum, so that was also a bit of a journey with him, and just to manage how do I help him nutritionally. Mm. So that took me into another space. So I just continue to evolve in the work that I do, and I just love it. And I think my biggest passion is kind of demystifying and just taking something that could become so technical to make it just so doable and fun. And all I want to see is parents have fun journeys with their kids.
You just reminded us that this, it was supposed to be fun. You know, it was supposed to be fun. Mm. I also want to acknowledge that, and I want to thank you for using your own life as a reason to help so many of us. And I can tell you, you have, Kath, you have helped so many of us. If you are not familiar with Kath's work, her biography is on babybrunch.co.za. We're going to load it there for her with a beautiful picture. She's very pretty up close. Okay. Food and pediatric dietitian of the stars, all those little stars that we're raising. Kath lives in Cape Town. She's a mom of three beautiful children, and she specializes as a clinical dietitian and a pediatric dietitian. And she's helped many, many people over the years. She is also part of a booklet that's published, including the bestseller, Weaning Sense, as well as Allergy Sense. Do you know that I still have my book? We've outgrown the allergies. I still have Allergy Sense. And now we get to have her in our Baby Brunch studio. A big, big thank you to our support.
Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Kiraprog's Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life. The Kiraprog's teething ring with integrated training toothbrush helps your child prepare for the day they start brushing their teeth. The Kiraprog's teething ring also promotes the development of sensory and motor skills.
This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior Gentle All-Purpose Emollient Moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax. Kath McGaw, before I even go through any of our questions that we have today, if you had to think of fussy eating, what's the biggest myth? Biggest?
Is that it's something you've done wrong? I think that's one of the biggest myths.
You're going to make me cry. Oh, my goodness.
I think that is the biggest thing. The first thing moms, when they, mom and dads, they come to me, the first thing I do is tell them they've done nothing wrong because there's so much noise out there. And I think it's just escalated and got worse and worse and worse. And they just feel like hopeless parents. I think the one fundamental thing we want to do as a parent is nourish our children and keep them alive
right.
and keep them growing. And I think if you are seen to be failing in either of those areas and spaces, you feel absolutely as a failed parent. And so that is my big shout out to parents is if you have a picky eater, you have done nothing wrong.
So define picky eater. I mean, I actually said to my listeners, you know, I went on air the other day and I said to them, I'm going to be talking to you. And I was gossiping about you on national radio. And I said to them, if you've got questions, let me know. And interesting things came out. People were talking about how food was the reason that some people took their lives, you know?
Yeah.
That food is the reason why, like now, that we're doubting ourselves as parents because what have I done wrong, you know? Food is not just about nutrition and nourishment. It's a much bigger issue.
It's part of our core identity, actually. And I think that is what I see so much. And I think there's a lot of change we need to make as practitioners and the medical profession in the way we present the story of food. From the moment a mom's pregnant, we dive in and we say, don't eat this, don't eat that, you must take this, do that, don't do this. And I'm not saying it's not always good advice, but I think it's the way we often frame it. But we do put a lot of emphasis on what you do and what you don't do. And then when the baby's born, we focus on weight, like those weight visits all the time.
Oy.
And it really, I think, creates an obsession around the weight and the space. And I often have families come to me with children who are growing on their curve. They've found their curve. They haven't read the book on the growth curve, so they're just growing happily on their curve. The parents say they are busy, they're active, they're developing, they're normal, they're doing all the things, but they've been, fear has been put into them that their child is not growing adequately. And so because of that, they start pressurizing the child to eat more and more and more.
Or less.
And then, or less, absolutely. And then we end up with picky eating or some sort of feeding disorder. We don't call it an eating disorder when they're under the age of 7. So we normally call it like a feeding disorder. Mm. And then we end up with picky eating, which is a mild version, or if it progresses, can become a feeding disorder, which is obviously much harder to work with.
So let's define it quickly. So picky eating, what would define a picky eater?
So it's generally, so we get a picky eater, which is the normal developmental stage, where they will choose food from every food group, but limited food from each food group. Then you get what we call a pathological picky eater. So a child that has got now heading towards the disorder space where they are eliminating whole food groups. And so that means they're avoiding all fruits and vegetables.
Right.
So they don't eat any. So not just, oh, my child only eats a banana and cucumber. That is when put a fit in the definition. And it must be over a period of time of more than 3 months. Mm. So not just a phase that they're going through or an illness that they're going through. The other common food group that's often removed is protein.
Mm.
So because it's hard work to chew. And often it starts off very just normal picky eating, which is what we say developmentally normal. But because the anxiety around it escalates, it can actually exacerbate and kind of overflow into a more pathological version.
So picky eating, I mean, is it both the role of parent and child, or do we label the child only?
Okay, so I think what's important to understand is that a child is part of the environment, but also part of genetics. So we do know that the parents' genes actually come through into preferences. And that's why when you are weaning your baby, and if you noticed in weaning sense, I can still remember, we were very encouraged in including fruit as equally as vegetables. We don't hold to the belief at all that you should only do vegetables and savory foods in case you create a sweet tooth child, because that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Genetics determine the choice of preferential sweetness or preferential savory, and that can go through the genes. There's even more research, which is really interesting. It's quite new, but showing that even the bitter taste buds are genetic. Ah. And so the more bitter taste buds you have in your mouth, the more you will find bitterness oils in foods like green veggies. Mm. And so if you have an abundance of those genetically, you're going to be more likely to resist the green veggies.
Gotcha.
So it doesn't mean you can never eat them or you won't ever eat them. It just means you're going to have to learn a bit harder to enjoy them. And I think that's the journey then we would have to help you go on if that was the case.
If you find you've got a picky eater, or that it's going towards a side where it might be a disorder, how do you know? And what do we do about it?
So I think you've got to, so the biggest defining factor is if your child is eliminating foods on a regular basis. So their diet has gone from being quite abundant to becoming less and less and less, and they start then eradicating a food group, then that's definitely a sign that you need to seek help. If your child is just going through, I don't want this today and I want this tomorrow, they're also just probably a toddler, because that's their job description. And so what is really important with toddlers is to have boundaries. And that boundaries are not a swear word. It's helpful. It's helpful for toddlers to have set times to do set things. And feeding is one of those set things. But another thing that's so important is ask yourself, what is the culture of food in our home? And what is the environment of food in our home? Jenny, you know Dr. Jenny Rose.
Yes, yes. She's been on Baby Brain. Hey, Jenny.
Her and I have just finished a book called Mindful Meals, which is a sequel to Wean in Sense. And she's done the whole psychology of food section in it. And we've taken parents from 2 to 18, 2 years old to 18. And I think what I like about the journey we've been on with that book is just, again, highlighting how important it is that the food, how does your child perceive food time? How do you perceive food time? If food time is becoming to you, I don't want to be there, it's so stressful, it's the last thing I want to think about in my day, then you know that there's a concern and we need to help with that. So the first thing I do when I see parents is just say, take a feed-in holiday. So if you've got a picky eater and you've noticed they are eliminating more and more foods, but they're still covering all the food groups, one thing you can do is just take a step back. Because what you're probably doing in those moments is trying to feed more and more. Just take a step back. Feed them the healthy foods that they will eat. And even if you do that for breakfast, lunch, and supper, it doesn't matter. But then ask yourself, what are we doing that's fun around this? Because toddlers want fun. They're all about learning. And they learn within 2 minutes, and then they need to learn something else.
It's so interesting that you're talking about, I'm going to just use the culture around food, you know? I'm thinking of the culture around food. So my husband and I this year in particular have decided to run more marathons and more races. So we are focusing on eating even more healthy. We're not a takeout type of family, but we're focusing more on eating. You will not believe the difference in even the little ones and the older kids. Everyone is trying to incorporate a little bit of more healthy. And I mean, it's the simplest example, like, you know, mommy and daddy do, and then they follow. But
so true.
I know, but like the culture in our home this past, let's say, 4 months has changed. And so everyone else is following too. Is it the same for baby? Baby has to eat healthy food, but we have steak and chips, man.
I think that it is totally the same. And you know what's so interesting, and I'm finding this more and more, is that parents will come to me for a fussy eating or picky eating consult, and I'll sit down and I'll get a whole picture. I go from birth, where are you at, everything like that. Then dad will pipe up often, oh, but he eats everything off my plate. So then I immediately know I'm not dealing with a picky eater. That's a bad story.
What's on your plate, Dad?
Yeah, it's like let baby eat from your plate. But if you're not happy with what's on your plate, then make the changes now to what's on your plate. Because your baby and your toddler, they want to do what you do. Your children want to do what you do. So the change always has to start with us as parents, both with our anxiety around food, with our belief system around food, with our environment around food.
What's coming up for me in this instant, Kath, is also the caretaker and the person that takes care of baby. My small baby had a pair at the time, and I remember coming home the one day. I had a TV show. I came home from work and I touched the food and it was cold. And I remember saying to her, "Don't you want to warm it up before you feed the baby? Like, I'm sure she would want warmer food." And then at some stage when I saw her now feeding her, it was quite rushed, you know? It was like this task that was in the way of play. And I realized at that stage that something must be wrong, you know? Should we take our time with eating?
And I think there's two points there. Is firstly, yes, it needs to be an engaging moment. It needs to be, and there must be a reason why the child is drawn to want to eat other than just food. We, as adults, we grow up learning that actually food's quite nice. We can actually enjoy it. We actually eat sometimes for taste. Sometimes we eat because we're really hungry. But babies and toddlers and young children don't get that. They don't actually understand the hunger feeling. A baby knows no difference to a hunger feeling than a bubble of gas. Which is why so many young babies get overfed, because we're trying to sort out the gas with food. And it's totally understandable, because they're not giving us the good messages. So I think that is really important, that we slow down, we engage with them. The other thing that is important in what you say is take time to actually train your caretaker into how you want to see the experience, and also what pressure are you putting on your caretaker. A lot of caretakers have actually come to consults with me, or been the ones bringing the child to the consults, and actually say that they feel a lot of pressure to get all the food in the child.
Right.
And so I think, again, it's managing expectations. When I actually tell parents how much a toddler can survive on healthily, they're shocked. And I think we often give them so much on their plate, they look at it and they go, "I'm not even going to get through half, so why start?" And instead of just going, just toning everything down, and that's what I call that feeding holiday, you know, just toning down anxiety, toning down the trying. Turning down the volumes and just the pressure and everything like that.
I must admit, I might have, it's maybe an old wives' tale. Okay, it's the truth. I might have at some stage given my baby two oranges to eat, because at that stage she wanted nothing else. And I still have a picture of her. You know, she was quite a funny baby. She had a good sense of humor and still does today. And she would put the orange in her lips, you know, so she would pretend that it's a smile.
Is so cute.
So I've actually got a picture of her age 8 with an orange in her mouth like a smile. And then as an 8-month-old, she's got a picture, you know, she was a really funny baby. So it's nice that we can break the rules. I love the feeding holiday.
Yeah.
Maybe I should try that for myself. Is fussy eating biological? Is it psychological? Are we overthinking it? Is it environmental?
I think it's a combination of things, but I think it's also normal developmentally. So I think in the beginning, just if you've had a great eater and your child's doing well and developing normally and they go through a picky eating stage, that is totally normal. But if it persists past 3 months and they start removing more and more foods, then yes, we definitely need to get involved and find out what's causing it, and maybe just give some assistance. I think biological, as I said, taste buds are inherited, genes are obviously the genetic inheritance, but then there's also environmental mirroring. So if dad has never eaten vegetables and the kids never see him eating vegetables, or he says yuck to vegetables, I'm not picking on dads, but or a mom or whatever. I often see, you know, parents who've struggled with eating and they don't want to eat in front of people, and now their child is there and their child actually never sees them eat. And it's hard. It's a hard journey, I understand, but for a healthy eater, to grow a healthy eater, you need to give them that opportunity to eat and eat around you.
I don't know why this is coming up for me, but immediately I'm thinking of mom and dad or partner and that we're not in agreement. But the child must eat their food. And I'm saying, but I think they've had enough. You know, this conflict around food and all these feelings, right?
Yeah, I think there's two things. It's the anxiety. So one partner might not have much anxiety and not see it as an issue. And the other partner is really feeling this is an issue and doesn't feel heard, which actually escalates the anxiety. And I think it's so important that we acknowledge each other's feelings around it privately, not in front of the child at mealtime, right. And that we make that agreement that we're not going to talk around what they're eating, what they're not eating while they're at the table. And then the other thing is not to bring your own conflict to the table, because if that becomes the space where conflict is resolved between you and your partner, it's not fair on those around trying to eat. And then suddenly that gets the feeling is that's what supper is about. Mm. Conflict, not fun, not just about my day. So
let's talk practical strategies. Mm. So I want to feed baby. And so what are your top tips? I mean, if I want to introduce food to fussy eater, you have now got a block. Okay, this is a fussy eater. What do I bring to the table?
So you don't. So I always say, and this might sound strange, don't introduce the new food to them. You eat the new food and let them sit on your lap and let them be curious. So we really want to create curiosity with kids. Okay. When you offer, you give a toddler an opportunity to say no, and they love that.
Yeah,
and then they'll say no just for the sake of it. They're going to say it just because they can.
So my child said no before she said mama, man.
Exactly. So don't give them that opportunity. Don't want to give them that opportunity to say no.
Okay.
So you make them curious. Make them feel like they're missing out, but you're enjoying this food. It's so yummy and so delicious. And that's exposure. We used to think exposure, and it's been badly taught that exposure is 15 times giving them, trying to get a spoon of butternut in their mouth or a broccoli stick on their plate. That's not exposure. That's just torture for you and them. So exposure would be going to the grocery store and saying, oh, there's the broccoli. Won't you just put it in the trolley for me? Then they actually have to focus on broccoli, deal with it, and they become curious about it. Then it might be in preparation space where you say, okay, you've got a knife. You can cut this. You're old enough. If they are, if they're not, they can have a, yeah, exactly, or break up the lettuce or let your two-year-old do that. You know, so those are exposure. And then the biggest exposure is the smells of food. And people don't realize that we actually taste with our smell first. So our taste buds actually get desensitized through us smelling the food. And so if you can cook food from scratch as much as possible, that would be amazing. If they can smell that broccoli being cooked, it's going to help them to not find it so bitter when they taste it.
Okay. In terms of refusal, because that can be a lovely game, you know, the no, the yes, and frankly, it just takes up time. Come on.
Yeah, 100%.
What to do?
So in your what's important is the stages. So if you have a picky eater, now we've established, and mom's established after this podcast, that they've got a picky eater and they really now want to address this. So they're going to first take a feeding holiday. So in that feeding holiday, you're going to set them up to win so that you decrease the no's. You're not going to offer food, new foods. You're just going to have them in your house and there's no more like you must eat, you must try, you must do. But there is going to be, this is the healthy food on your plate. This is the set meal time. And this is what you get. If the child then says, I don't want this. And you say, okay, that's fine. That means you're not hungry. So you now equate, I know you like this food, but you're rejecting it. So I'm going to assume then you're not hungry because that's why we stop eating. You see, we don't stop eating because we just want to be difficult. We stop eating because we're not hungry. So you need to train that mindset into them with simple vocabulary. So if it's a toddler, you can just say, oh, is your tummy full? And pat their stomachs. And then you can say, okay, that's fine. Say, thank you, mommy, for the food. Right, you can be excused from the table. And now we go wash your hands. We go bath, da-da-da-da. And then you know that you've got another opportunity that you're going to give them to, now it's another meal time. You know that you've put that in place because they haven't eaten that last meal. So that at some point after six opportunities, set opportunities to eat in the day, they will eat something if you serve in food that they do enjoy. Okay. If they don't, then they might be coming down with something and sick. Okay. Because most toddlers don't have a death wish and don't want to not eat, especially when you're offering foods they like.
Yeah.
So then it's very likely they're sick. And on that note, I am very passionate about this. When kids are sick, don't force them to eat.
Okay.
No one's forcing you to eat when you've got flu and a fever of 39 or 40 degrees.
I just eat always.
Doesn't
matter the fever.
Most of us, stomach bug, surely you wouldn't eat.
Never had one.
So most of us don't want to eat when we're sick. So don't, because that food gets that connotation. And don't panic. They'll be okay. Let them get through their sickness. And then when they come out of it, then they actually double up their eating naturally. So we've got to trust them a little bit more.
What if baby or toddler doesn't want to eat? Can we top off with milk?
Okay. So I think there is a place for specific milk, not just anyone. I would be very cautious to top up with just copious amounts of cow's milk, just standard cow's milk. And the reason being that it actually can leach iron out of their guts and can cause a lot of constipation. So we see a lot of iron deficiency when toddlers are on a very high milk diet. So it would, if you are going to give them a supplement that's nutritional and complete, I would do it right at the end of the day to fill the gaps of what was missed in the day. So to give them lots of opportunities to eat in the day and then to kind of that last kitchen call, give them a bottle of a good nutritional supplement. And the reason why it is important to do that is because if a child becomes so malnourished, eventually they lose their desire to eat. Then you're really dealing with a challenge.
Right.
So you end up with a child who is even kind of partial malnourishment can reduce appetite.
Okay.
So we always say, I love that saying, a well-nourished child wants to eat.
Love it.
So often we see that repeated illnesses, the creche syndrome kind of scenario where a child gets sick, goes back to school for a week, gets sick again, goes back to school for a week. Now, during every illness, they're eating less and less. And so what happens is that they eventually, through illness as a result, become malnourished.
Okay.
And then their appetite just never picks up. So you actually have to fix that appetite. It's broken. And I equate it to the nutritional supplement like using crutches. And that you need crutches when your leg is broken, but you also need to know when to stop using those crutches. Right. You can't stay on crutches your whole life when your leg is working well.
Yeah.
And that's where we've got to be very careful, because it can then swing in the other direction, where a child's just living on the nutritional supplement all day, or eating now better and living on the nutritional supplement. And then obviously the weight is going up maybe unnaturally. So I think it's that combination, but it's very important. It's important to use them when needed, but it's also important to wean them when no longer needed.
How can we encourage a positive relationship with food without pressuring them? And I want to also take that responsibility and say, how can I, as a parent, encourage a positive relationship with food so that I can create a habit that my children can adopt?
So I think the hard answer is that as a parent, do you have a positive relationship with food? I think you need to assess that and just go a bit introspectively and go, how do I feel around food? What's my experience of food? Often parents out of what we experienced that was negative maybe growing up, and we do the opposite, and sometimes we do it the extreme. Sometimes we find a nice middle path. Or other times we don't. We just repeat that was done, and that often happens in the food space. So it's just an awareness, I think, firstly. And then the second thing is that make it enjoyable and a fun environment and space. Like I said, it needs to just be a happy space. And then the other thing that's so important is that you need to find time outside of food to connect with your child. Because I find with my picky eaters, my heart breaks in that the relationship has become food. Just food.
I get it.
And I understand how, but it's so sad for me. And that's actually why I started the whole feed-in holiday thing. And when I work with parents who've got, you know, where the picky situation has gone quite out of control, I actually take responsibility for their nutrition for that month. And I say to parents, just send me the food diary. I'm just going to check in. You're not going to check in. You're not going to worry. You're not going to try and decide, is your child eaten enough? You're not going to use your app or anything like that. I'm going to do it. You're just going to make those opportunities available. And then outside of that, do non-food stuff.
What about a good bribe? If you eat your food, look at this chocolate marshmallow. I'm going to give you a chocolate marshmallow. I'll give you a heart.
So I don't like bribes at all.
Why not?
And the reason I don't like bribes is because it's not a natural consequence for eating your food. A natural consequence for eating your food is being full
and to grow,
being healthy and to grow.
Kat, that's so responsible.
I know. But we've all bribed. I did.
Yeah.
I did out of desperation, but it doesn't help.
The reason why
it doesn't help is a bribe actually puts the picky eater in control. And you've got to keep the control.
A bribe puts the picky eater in control.
Yeah.
No!
It does. Because they can say no. That bribe can lose its impact. They can say no, and then they're in charge again.
But I'm in charge.
No, you're not really. So, yeah, bribing, coaxing, those things really, really don't help. Yeah. What helps is just kind of neutrality. We're doing this. It's important for your body. It's fun. I'm going to engage with you. I'm going to make it enjoyable. This is food you like. Eat your food. If you're not hungry now, I respect that, but there's going to be another opportunity 2 hours later. And that's kind of the progress in the day. No bribing. No. When we have, you want, and then also I also recommend a last kitchen call, which is very helpful. So that stops the whole kind of, my child, you eat your food and then you can have pudding. So you get pudding or last kitchen call no matter what. Mom will decide or dad will decide on the pudding. But it doesn't have to be ice cream every night. Mm-hmm. It can be a fruit salad or it can be cut up mango if a child loves mango. Mm-hmm. So it must be something they enjoy. Be a little yogurt or it could be a little milkshake or something like that, a healthy milkshake. You want it to be nutritious. Mm-hmm. And that's irrespective of what they've done at supper time. Okay. So they never know what's coming and they never know. That's totally on you. And then once the last kitchen call is done, then it's done. So there's no, I'm lying in bed now and I've suddenly realizing I'm actually hungry because the day was so exciting and I didn't have time to eat. Now I'm lying in bed and that's boring. I don't really want to go to sleep. Now I realize I am actually hungry. So that stops that.
But they also want to do a dance quickly. And then they want to show you what they did at school and how they carried their friend. And then half an hour later, you're at the piano playing songs and no one's in bed. Okay. So don't mess with me. Yeah. It's bedtime. All right.
So last kitchen call is for food. And then you can do last show call, the last curtain call. We'll call it the last curtain call. Last curtain call. And then it's bedtime.
So my baby is 8 and then I've still got my 9-year-old, of course, and then my other ones are much bigger. But we still do bedtime story.
I love that.
And last kitchen call is a hot drink.
Okay.
And by the time we're in bed reading stories, don't ask because we're going to bring you a nice big flask with ice water. That's how we go to bed.
Good.
You know, and if you're thirsty in the night, you can drink some delicious water.
Absolutely.
Even I like my cold water at night.
Brilliant.
I don't want to, because this is something that actually happened to me. You know, I have very little play dates with my children. I think it's good for us to limit it. And we've got one particular family that visits and the children refers to my vegetables that I present to them as yuck. What to do when your children are in love with vegetables and food, but perhaps family children or visitors don't like what is being presented. How does one handle that? You know, do they bring their own meals? Mm. Do we encourage them to perhaps? I actually don't know the answer.
So I think that's a hard one because that's obviously not your child.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, you don't never want to enforce anything, but you can just, I think that's why the buffet style works really well.
Mm, you choose.
So people choose, and that works very well for the picky eating journey when you're trying to get kids onto more foods to do buffet style, where you know that if you've got a family member or regular friends that you see a lot and you know that one of their children is a picky eater and for maybe their various reasons, then you make sure that there is something there that you will be served if you are providing
good
all
advice.
The food for them.
Yeah.
If the mom wants to bring something, she would need to bring something to add to the buffet.
Mm.
So not a separate meal for that child.
Right.
And that I think is very helpful. And then you actually are helping that child because you're creating the buffet style, which has been shown to be one of the most effective ways to encourage a child to actually try something new because it's no pressure, but they see everyone has got access.
Could picky eating result in a medical condition?
It can. If they are eliminating a whole food group, they can get severe iron deficiency anemia. And they can actually get stunted if they are like not eating any protein, for example.
Right.
But it would have to be over a period of time. So these are healthy kids we're talking about over a long period of time. So that's why you want to nip it in the bud earlier than later.
Okay.
And nip it in the bud is often not becoming aggressive over it. It's actually often backing off, but just having your boundaries and maybe taking back some of the responsibility because picky eating often also kind of gets triggered when we hand too much responsibility to them. They're not able to ask, if you say to a child, what do you want for supper? Flip, I stress about that idea. What am I going to cook for supper? That's like a stressful moment in my day.
That's a big question.
What am I going to cook for supper tonight?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So why are we asking our toddler or our three-year-old or our four-year-old, what do they want for supper tonight? That's an adult question. And so we can say, I'm making this for supper. Would you like this or this as your protein or something like that? That's okay if you've got a picky eater that you're journeying with. Or you can, as they get older, you can involve them and say, let's plan meals for the week. What is your favorite? What is your favorite? What is your favorite? So you can do things like that. But it's not now all on them at all. So you need to decide what, you need to decide when and where. And then they must decide how much.
Okay.
And picky eating happens when we try and determine how much they need to eat. Like you will eat that, you will finish that whole plate of food. And or when we are like, when do you want to eat? Where do you want to eat? We'll wait for you to ask, you know, that sort of thing. It's not actually helpful because it's too much for them. They don't have that ability.
Could picky and fussy eating refer to children eating too much?
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen cases of severe picky eating where a child will only eat one food group, where they come to me for obesity. And then when they come, I realize they're super picky and dangerously picky. They've actually got deficiencies. We call that hidden hunger.
Okay.
So that visibly, you wouldn't look at that child and go, oh my word, you're starving. But actually, at cellular level, the cells, you do the bloods, they're starving children. And so we start correcting those in different ways. And I always try and do it in the easiest way possible. And even those kids, sometimes I will decrease the white food group, which is often the one that they fixate on, and then increase, and then maybe give a supplement even just to get them going. So definitely.
Well, there you heard it. Kath McGaw in our studio. We'll also put her details in our social media post, or you can find it on babybrunch.co.za.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Kiraprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life. The Kiraprox teething ring with integrated training toothbrush helps your child prepare for the day they start brushing their teeth. The Kiraprox teething ring also promotes the development of sensory and motor skills.